Good evening. Okay, I'm Pastor Peter Jibia from Liberia, and I am very much happy to be in your midst tonight. I'm most honored by the reception of me into your church. We have been traveling on the road, and it had not been easy because this is my first time coming to the United States in the winter. And the snow started falling, and the first time I've seen, you know, that amount of snow falling, and it comes along with it some amazement. We were on the road, and I saw cars just going off the road like this, you know, sliding, just like, you know, a sliding contest. So I said, wow, God have mercy. Okay. However, God is in control because we are on the field for his purpose. So this is my family. My wife is called Ellen Jibia. Our president is called Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. And my wife is called Ellen Jibia, and she is a nurse. And so anytime she goes to work, her friends and other people call her the president. Okay? So, but she's my president. And this is our family, Precious. She's in a medical college. Shadrach, he's in ninth grade. Emmanuel, he just graduated from a vocational school. He's doing electricity. But he wants to take after me. He wants to be a pastor. So he wants to come to the stage, you know, to study. So pray for him. And I got converted in 1972, December 14. My parents grew up with the Baptist Made Missions. When they came to Liberia back in 1932 by one of the Baptist missionaries called A.B. Ganta. Okay, he carried your Baptist mission in Liberia. And then my father and my mother became Christian, and they took the missionaries in. And after I came on the scene, I was born, they told me about Jesus Christ and about the salvation that they have got. And from there, I accepted the Lord. And then I told them, God or Jesus Christ had taken hold of my life, and I would never return to where I was. And I made a commitment, I made a resolution that I will be with Jesus Christ until, you know, he takes me out of this place. And so I have a song, and this song is Jesus, you know, got a hold of my life. And I believe Jesus got a hold of your life. That is the reason you are here, and that is the reason you will always be here. Okay? It's a long-lasting commitment that we as Christians have to make. It is not just one day or one week or one year, but we have to walk with Jesus all the way. Jesus got a hold of my life, and he won't let me go. Jesus got into my heart, he got into my soul. I used to be your soul sad, but now I'm just free and glad. God, Jesus got into my life, and he won't let me go. First time I remember how I used to be living in sin. I used to all happy and free, but I wasn't within. I fooled a lot of friends of mine, and I told them I had peace of mind. But I never had that peace until one day when I let Jesus in. So Jesus got a hold of my life and he won't let me go. Jesus got into my heart, he got into my soul. I used to be so sad, but now I'm just free and glad. God, Jesus got into my life, and he won't let me go. Are you ever tired of seeing the left just fooling around? You try to act happy and free, but not getting a ground. Why not call to the Lord today and asking in your heart to stay? Then you will never know that Jesus is the only one that you have. So Jesus got a hold of my life and he won't let me go. Jesus got into my heart, he got into my soul. I used to be so sad, but now I'm just free and glad. God, Jesus got into my life and he won't let me go. God, Jesus got into my life and he won't let me go.
Well, I don't know where to go again. Okay, I'm going to use... I think I get it. Okay, can you still hear me? Okay. My country is Liberia, and it was founded in 1816 by the American Colonization Society, that is free slaves that came from America back in 1816. You know, there was an emancipation treaty that was signed by your president, but it was 1863. But actually, for slaves to be free, it all started back in 1807 by men like William Wilberforce from England and others. And then free slaves in America that came from Africa, they took advantage of that and they went back. And those that went back, they were on the west coast of Liberia and they founded a nation called Liberia. That is the reason Liberia is called Little America in West Africa. And you see the flag, it almost resembles that of the United States, except it has one star, which represents Liberia, the only country that had independence on the dark continent of Africa, you know. And Liberia got independence in 1847, July 26, okay. So the population of the country is 3.7 million, but from recent census, it is 4 million now, and the country covers 43,000 square miles. Christianity is the main faith, even though it includes Pentecostals as well as Catholics. And we have 30% of Muslims. They are coming. Liberia borders with a predominant Muslim country called Guinea, and so they are coming into the country. That is the reason we have a tax, a responsibility to plant churches and reach the length and breadth of Liberia before these Muslims get there, because we know what they can do. We know what is happening in Nigeria, okay, with the Boko Haram. They are killing Christians, they're burning churches, but we don't want for them to take a foothold, so we are in the business of reaching to the length and breadth of Liberia, planting churches and telling the people about Jesus Christ.
Our president is called Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. She is the woman president. And then the country is a democratic, has a democratic form of government. And of course, the official language is English. We speak some kind of English. It's not a real English, but we try to, you know, just communicate in the marketplace, in the school, we speak English. United Baptist Central Church, after I graduated from the seminary, Liberia Baptist Theological Seminary, that established the church called the United Baptist Church. And then for a long time, it had been a challenge. And we used to meet in there until when I came here in the United States, 2007, a friendly church, Christian church, helped us and gave us some money. And we used that money to build this structure from the foundation to roof level. And then it sat down there for so long. And I want for you to know that Liberia, 80 to 85% of the people is not working. Liberia went through civil crisis for 15 years, and most of the companies, the investors, they all left. And the war is over. Now, they are coming back, but it is on a gradual process. So it is that year full-blown. So not many of the people are working. But however, with the meager resources we have, the little money we have, we decided to start the work again after five years. So we started by buying crushed rocks and other things, and were looking, you know, praying to God to make available 15,000 at the time so that we will roof the building, we completed and roof the building. And we told our women, we said by faith, we have to take the first step, then God is going to come in. We shouldn't sit down. Faith is action. Your faith has to be in action, then God gets into motion. So we can't just sit down. We have to be doing something. So with the little money we have, we started to work. And we molded some blocks, and we told the men to be working. And at the same time, we were planting churches, you know, in the interior. Then it came to pass, God answered our prayer. And a church in the States here helped us and said, since you're going to have a conference this year, which was last year, December, you're going to have a conference, we are going to help you to roof your building. So we said, okay. So, I mean, we were very happy, we were very glad, and everybody in the church was very glad because the work had been done for 5 years. So when the money came, the ladies, you know, they were very, very happy. You know, the ladies in every church, they are more concerned, you know, for the well-being of the church. So I don't know about America, but in Africa, the women, you know, they are very strong when it comes to, you know, the work of the church. So they always pray, they always, you know, in the service, they always on their knees. Now, this old man, she have a special story for being happy. After 5 years, when the work of the church was not been carried on, she was so disappointed, she was so frustrated. So one day she walked up to me and said, "Pastor, I have come to tell you goodbye." So I asked her, "But where are you going?" She said, "No, I'm not going anywhere, but I want to die." I said, "For what?" She said, "But I'm frustrated because my whole life, I don't have anything to do in the world again. I have given my life to Jesus Christ, and I've been praying so that this church will be built, and I worship in the church before the Lord calls me home. But it looks like this is not going to happen. So I have decided for me to be with the Lord so that when you remain back here, you can build your church. But I don't think that the church will get finished before I die because I'm very old now, and I really wanted to work in the church, to worship in the church, but things, you know, I'm not going the way that I thought. So I'm just going to tell you goodbye." Now, that took tears from my eyes, and I told her, I said, "Mother, what you have just said is a challenge to God. I want to assure you that you will worship in this building before you die. And you're not going to die now. You're going to worship in the building. You're going to be with us. And you're going to, you know, celebrate, you know, in this building. So when the money came, she was very, very happy. That is, she's the one that you're seeing there. Then the men in the church, we told them, since we're having a conference, we have to make sure to get this building done before December. Now, we started the job July 21, 2015. So everybody was willing to work. So everybody started working. And the work was going on. And then we didn't have a car to get our cement. We used about 350 bags of cement to carry up the roof and then the gable end and build it. So my son, Emmanuel, he is the driver of our modern cement truck, the motorbike, and then he's moving it. Now, every trip is two bags. They bring two bags. So they took about 175 trips to complete the 350 bags from the store. So everybody was working. And finally, we pulled up the gable end. The gable end was completed. And after that, we called all the women, all the men, the women one side, the men one side. And then we went in the church on the gable end, and we begin to, you know, pray. And then this little girl said, "Well, I want to tell the American people thank you for the job that they have done." She's an orphan. For the job that they have done, you know, by building the gable end, and then the roof will soon be getting on. Then finally, we started to work on it. Now, the building is so large, it's 50 by 100 feet. And we didn't want to use timbers, so we decided to use iron trusses. But we didn't have crane. So what we did, we built scaffolds, and we have three set of men, one to the top and in the middle and on the ground, and then we have rope and carry those things up. This is how we roofed the entire building. And finally, it was roofed, and the building stands there today. We have our conference in there, and we sent for the missionary. We sent for the pastor of the church that helped us to dedicate the building. This is a dedicatory ceremony. The men are here, the women on the other side, and that is inside the building. And we're using plastic chairs, and the building takes about 1,000, you know, plastic chairs. And presently, we have about 75, and we are praying that we want to start up with 500 plastic chairs. So this is where we are. So it is not only the church, it is not only that building that we focus our attention, but right after the conference in 2015, we made a resolution, we made a commitment that by 2016, we want to plant 10 churches. How do we do that? We have men in training. We train our own people. And then in a Bible school, we have set aside 20 men to go on the field to plant churches. And we send them two by two. Every two men will go in a village and start a fellowship. Okay, so they're going into 10 villages, 20 persons, two going into 10 villages to start a fellowship. And then that will be their assignment, you know, for that course, church planting. And they are going to focus their attention on it. Every weekend, they go there. Then before the year ends, eventually, the fellowship that they have established will grow into a church. So this is a strategy we're using, and we'll be planting 10 churches. Now, one of our church planting endeavors carry us to the jungle. Here, I'm crossing the river. Liberia has six major rivers, and this is one of the biggest rivers. It's called St. John River. This river is infested with all kinds of creatures, the alligators, the boa constrictors, hippopotamus, they're all in there, okay? So it is very fearful. People don't easily cross it. When I took these people to the place that we were going for the church planting, we got to the river, and then because they all know the history of that place, and so they said, "Pastor, we learned that this water is so dangerous, but what we want to do is this. We want for you, you have been here, you know, several times, we want for you to cross the river first. If nothing happens to you, then we'll follow you." Wow. Now, that was a test of my faith. That was a test of the faith of the pastor. Okay? So, but I do know that I'm on the field for God, and then he's going to protect me. So I got in the canoe and asked one of the villagers to take me across. So he took me across. Nothing happened to me, so everybody joined me. And we went in the village. And when we got in the village, we met this man. He is the one who is taking care. He and his wife, and he has a lot of dependents. And some of the children in the village, some of the men, women in the village, they join him, and we establish a fellowship there. And he's taking care of that fellowship now. So every time we have, you know, the time to go there to help him to nurture the newly established fellowship. Not only that, but we continue our church planting in the interior because our ministry is in the interior. But the roads in the interior are so bad. That is the reason when many people come to Liberia to do evangelism, they don't go in the interior because in the interior you don't have much there. The war was so devastating, and it turned just everything upside down. Now, the roads are so bad. Here, we were going for church planting, but the bus that we rented got stuck in the mud, and so everybody had to get down and walk. So we call this pay to walk. Even though we pay money for the bus to carry us, the truck to carry us, but when it gets stuck in the mud, sometimes we walk a mile. Then later on, the bus can follow us before we get in. So this is what we're doing. We are going for the church planting. And when we got to this other village, the people accepted us. And they said, okay, that's good. In this village, the Baptist Mission used to have an airstrip in this place here. Used to have a church here. But since the missionary left, no Baptist church. So since you came, we accept you and we will give you a pastoral land. So we carry on the survey. The man in the red is the pastor that we assign in that area. And not only that, but we usually, you know, nurture our churches by visitation. You know, Paul used to take missionary journeys. After he planted churches, he would go back to go and visit them. That would encourage, you know, the members, that would encourage other people. So here, one of our churches called Antioch Unity Baptist Church, we pay a visit there, and not only that, but Calvary Unity Baptist Church, we go there and pay a visit. That's the pastor and his wife. And we use the motorbike to go on these visits, you know, as we go up interior because the roads are bad and we don't have cars. So the motorbike is our only, you know, means of transportation. But unfortunately, when I got here, 1 week after I got here, my wife called me and said, rogue, broke into the church and stole the motorbike and 50 of the plastic chairs, you know. So that is very pathetic. But I do know that God is still in control, okay? Now, here is our Bible school. This is where we train our pastors and put them in the field. And these are some of the men that are in training. We're getting ready to go out. And we send them two by two, as Jesus Christ did with the disciples, to go and, you know, plant churches. And sometimes we take the Bible school under the tree and invite the people in the village to come and listen to the word of God. And eventually some of them make a decision about that, because when the Bible school is in the classroom, they are afraid to go there. The thing is just something mystic, but it is not so. So we bring the Bible school outside, lecture outside, and invite just everybody. And when they come, some of them express their desire to be part of the Bible school or to accept Jesus Christ. And that has been really working out well. And the women of the church organize themselves into the conference. So these women, they have their teachers. Those are the two teachers in the front there. They have their own teachers, and they teach them. In every November, you know, November in every year is their conference. So they organize themselves, and that's the women choir, and they just sing. I mean, it's marvelous. Okay. Now, after all of this, we have our own, you know, prayer request, our own prayer concern, and my wife and I, being a pastor in Liberia, the people believe that in the home of the pastor is where children should be nurtured. So most of the people bring their children to me to live so that I will bring them up. Presently, I have about 10 of those children living with me, including orphans and my own children. Okay? So if we were, our goal, you know, on a monthly basis is $600. If we have $600, it can keep, you know, our family going, it can keep our work going, and then we will not be concerned with working, because you cannot be bifocal and, you know, concentrate on the church. So we decided to put our everything into the church. So if God bless us and we, you know, reach that goal, then it will really be good for us. Presently, we have $300 going, and we pray, asking God for the balance. Now, it was my prayer that God gave me or gave the ministry a four-wheel drive Jeep. So I sent a prayer request all over the place. And God saw that the need was genuine. So he spoke to the brother, and the brother gave a four-wheel drive Jeep here in America when I came and gave it to the mission, said this for Pastor Peter's ministry. That's very great, because it is so amazing. Okay? In my country, nobody will give you a bicycle. Okay? But the Americans, you know, they are a good set of people, even though they might have their problem. Every country has problem, but there is one thing, you know, that stands out for the Americans, is that they are giving people. And whenever you give, you are blessed. So he gave this Jeep free of charge, but the only thing remaining now is to ship it to Liberia. I thought they could drive a Jeep from here to Africa, but there's no way. I can't drive it from here to Africa. I have to ship it. So it takes $2,100. And I want for you to pray with me so that God, you know, will make provision of that money. And the chairs, we need about 500 chairs for now. We have 175, and each of the chairs is $21. And our goal is, you know, the balanced chair, we want to get it so that the worship can keep going. Since we build the church, every Sunday the church is getting filled. I don't know whether the people were waiting for the church to be roofed or to be built before they would come in. The very people that used to pass by the church, they are now entering the church. Today, when we're coming, my wife called me and said, oh, we have to go out today to ask for benches because no chair. The church was very packed, you know. And this is what God is doing. And this is what we have been craving for, so that people will come, you know, to see the wondrous work of Jesus. And the church, we completed it, but it's like 90%. The windows do not have glasses, they do not have window frames, and we have 30 windows, and each of those windows, the glasses and the frame, we call about $95. So we are also praying for that. The entire 30 windows will cost about $2,800. So be in prayer with us as we go along. And our objective is to glorify God and all that he is. All of the things we're doing, it is not for our own glory, but it is for the glory of God. So having seen all of these and heard all of these, if you have any gifts for our ministry, you can direct those gifts through this address, International Gospel Mission, and then it's going to reach us. Okay, this is not on. Well, briefly, I want to share something with you before we get down. I'm very, very cautious, you know, when I'm speaking to American audience, because they are time-conscious people, you know. Somebody told me, you ought to be very, you know, careful with American. They are time-conscious people. So when they ask you to speak, you have to be brief, you be to the point, and you be gone. So I said, okay, that's good. I'm going to take that into consideration. So I'm not going to spend 1 hour here,
Okay. Jesus Christ, addressing his disciples one day, this is what he had to tell them. He said, "You have not chosen me, but I have chosen you and ordained you that you should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatsoever you should ask in the Father's name, he may give it to you." It is amazing. Our position in Christ does not come by our decision. Jesus Christ chose us long before we were born. He said, "You have not chosen me, but it is I who chose you." You know, Romans 5, it have it like this. God commended his love towards us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. In that while we were yet sinners. It means that we didn't have anything to do with God. We were on our way to destruction. We were disobedient. We have turned our back on God. And in the process, Jesus Christ came. He came searching for us in the debris of sin to save us. So he was telling the disciples, and not only the disciples, but he was telling generation to follow. He said, "You have not chosen me, but I have chosen you. And I chose you for the purpose." And what is that? He said, "I ordain you. I set you apart. I make you to be a special person." Now, if Christians will realize their position in Christ, then they would not be playing around. Okay, but unfortunately, some Christians don't know, and so they fall into the trap of the world. They mingle with the world, and their identity as Christians get lost by the way. But Jesus Christ, truly, he chose us, and then he gave us a task. He said, "I want for you to go." He didn't only choose us so that we'll be sitting. Christianity is dynamic. It is not static. When you become Christian, you have to get on your feet to go for Jesus Christ. This is the message he told the disciples in Acts 1:8. "You shall receive power after the Holy Ghost has come upon you, and you shall be witnesses unto me here in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the uttermost part of the earth." That is the task that Jesus Christ gave to every one of us, those that are called by his name, those that have come under his name. That is the work that we have to do. He said, "You did not choose me, but I chose you, and I chose you for the purpose. But first, I set you apart. You are a different, you know, set of people." Okay? Do you know the reason God chose Israel? God chose Israel to manifest his glory through Israel to the entire world. So the same thing, we as Christians, God chose, or Jesus Christ chose us, you know, distinctively for a purpose. And that purpose is for us to be a manifestation of Jesus Christ to the world. We are the hands and feet of Jesus Christ. So we have to go all out to tell the world about his salvation. He said, "I want for you to go." The Christian work is a work of motion. We have to be in motion. We have to go. We don't have to sit down one place. The world is getting lost. Remember what the 1 Peter 5:8? He said, "The devil is like a roaring lion, roaming about, seeking whom he may devour." Now, what is happening here, this is exactly the contrast of what Jesus Christ, you know, told us, that Christians should not sit down, because the devil is also not sitting down. He's on his feet. He's like a roaring lion. And what he's doing, is he sitting? No. He says he's moving about. He's going about from place to place and making sure, like what Dr. Groth was saying, the Muslims are pumping huge money into various groups that they have set up to plan their wicked agenda,
their beliefs into all of the countries. Okay? So we should not sit down. When we sit down, Christianity will come to a loss. Okay? Because the devil's intention is to depopulate the kingdom of Jesus Christ and populate his kingdom. Because he knows very well that he has been doomed already. He had no place in heaven. His home is hell. And so he doesn't want to go there alone. He wants others to be with him. So this is his strategy. So he's not sleeping. Now, Jesus Christ gave a parable in Matthew 13, 24, 25, and following. He said, a man planted a vineyard, and he put in good seeds. But then eventually, when they looked, they saw the wrong seed planted in the vineyard among the right seeds. And the vineyard dressers went to the master. He said, but we thought you planted good seeds. He said, yes. He said, but we see the wrong seeds. He said, yes, something happened. But this is what happened. Enemy is the one that has done this. But do you know when the enemy did it? He said, no. He said, why you were asleep? Now, if the church will be sleeping, the enemy will plant the wrong seed, and they will prevail. But we don't want this to happen. You know, today, the arch enemy of Christianity is Islam. And it is so regrettable that these guys are on their feet more than the church. I was reading from the Pew Research Center record, what they have there, and this is what they have to say. In America, 67% of converts to the Islamic faith have a Muslim background, or have Christian background. Let me say that again. They said 67% of people that go to be Muslim, they come from a Christian background. What does this mean? It means that they are doing their work. They are working. They're not sleeping. Okay? Now, one Muslim cleric called Jabba Omar Ibrahim, this is what he says. He said, Muslims have an obligation to reach every place that the sunlight reaches. Now, this is a commitment that they have made. This is their obligation. They say they are going to reach everywhere that the sunlight reaches. Now, if the devil is so concerned with winning the world, then we as Christians, we should not be asleep. Jesus Christ says, I chose you for the purpose, because he knew all of this. He knew that bad time would come. He knew that the devil would want to take over his whole creation. And so he said, I choose you, that you should go and bring forth fruit. Okay? Then he said that your fruit should remain. Now the fruit he's talking about here is we have to make disciples. Okay? In this very place here, Allegheny, we know that so many people are still here that have not accepted Christ. But how will you get them here? You get them here by going to them. They can't come to you because they have not seen what you've seen. Okay? You have seen the light, and they have not seen it. And the only way they will come to the light is when you become a touch bearer to them. You have to go out to them. And not only going out to them, but the second thing about it is that your way of life should commensurate with what you say. That is, your preaching and your practice should be the same. You know, Jesus Christ put it this way in Matthew 6:16. Say, let your light so shine before men, so that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Okay? If our preaching and our practice is not consistent, we cannot win the world. A story is told about a man who went in a pet shop to buy a pet. He went in the pet shop. There were so many, you know, pets in the shop. They get pet care. They get dog. They get rabbits. They get all kind, you know, pets in the shop. So then he went and paid for a cat. And the man took the cat and sneaked it in the bags and he sealed it up. But there were so many pets in the shop, so the man left it back there, and he went around, and he began to look at, you know, some of those pets. While he turned his back, this man cleverly opened the box, took out the cat and sneaked in your dog, and he closed it. When the man got back, he picked up the box and went to his wife and said, "Honey, I brought a pet cat." "Good," called all the children that ran, put the box on the table, opened the box, there sat a dog. Man, the man was so furious. He took the box, sealed it up, and ran back to the store. The man in the store knew very well what has happened, and he was prepared for it. When the man came, he dashed the box on the table, he turned it back. And then he was, you know, quarreling, you know, and talking. And after he turned it back, the man again cleverly opened the box, took out the door, and sneaked in the very cat and sealed it up quick. Then he called the man, "Well, why are you causing noise? What's the problem?" He said, "Well, you deceived me. Instead of cat, you put in a dog." He said, "No, that's your cat." He said, "No. We saw the dog. My children saw it. My wife saw it. I saw it." He said, "Yeah, but let's open the box." They opened the box. They saw a cat. And I said, "Wow." So the man looked at the cat for a long time. Then this is what he said. He said, "Cat, if you want to be a cat, you should be a cat. You want to be a dog, you should be a dog. You cannot be a dog at my house and then be a cat here." Okay? Now, what does this show us? What does it tell us? Some of us can be a dog here and then look like a cat outside. You know, Joshua say, "Choose you this day whom you will serve. But as for me and my house, we serve the Lord." Okay? If you want to serve the Lord, you serve him. If you want to serve the God on the other side, so you go there. But you cannot be inconsistent. Okay? So Jesus Christ said, you have to go and bring fruit. And let your fruit remain. And how will we bring the fruit? We do it by the consistency of what we preach and what we practice, or should go together. Then he says, when we do that, then we are at liberty. Anything we ask the Father, he's going to do it for us. You know. So I have come to ask you to share with you my testimony, my ministry, and also encourage you. We all are striving to reach the mark. But as a country, as a people, as a nation, as a church, we should be on our feet. The time is short. Those things that Jesus Christ talked about, they are unveiling now. Prophecies are coming to pass. You know, there's gross disrespect for God and for Scripture. Today, we've been hearing that even in your court, you can read the Ten Commandments, you can read the Bible in your school. This nation, America, was built on Christian principle. We read your history. I'm a history teacher. I read your history. You know, your first president, of Washington, and president to follow. The mindset that they have for this nation is not what is happening now. Okay, this nation is gradually slipping away from that original purpose. And let me tell you one thing. When you begin to slip away from the purpose for which God called you, he got a way of calling your attention. First, he does it in a little voice. And the little voice is the preachers, the electronic media. Okay? And they talk to you, they preach to you. If you don't hear it, then he shouts. And when God shouts, it is so cataclysmic. You know, you have earthquake. He knows he speaks through earthquake. When he went on Mount Sinai and Moses said, the children of Israel want to talk to you, he said, let them come, I will talk to them. You know, and when God started to talk, you know, we saw volcanic eruption. Okay, it was certain time here when I came to 2005. There was hurricane that took over New Orleans, Hurricane Katrina. This is how God shouts. Now, if you still don't listen, he's going to shout a little louder. 9/11 came in this country. And the reason he does that is to call your attention. You know, anytime when there is real problem, people have the tendency to rush to God. Then when things are very easy, when things are good going, you know, people are just, they are complacent, they relax, and they're doing their own thing. And so God have a way of calling our attention. My country was built on Christian principle, but it came to pass that we begin to degenerate into spiritual decay until God called our attention. For 15 years, the country of Liberia was in war, and we lost 250,000 people, 250,000. And during the war, every church was filled with human beings, you know. So God has a way of calling us back. When things are smooth, the tendency is there for you to turn your back. In my country, I preached a sermon one time. The title of that sermon was Potholes on God's Highway. You know, God's highway, sometimes he can create potholes. When I came to America, I saw that your roads are so paved. Now, when the roads are paved, there's a danger. The danger is there, you can have frequent accidents because the roads are paved. But when you have bumps on the road, it makes you to take time. So God has a way of creating potholes on our highway. When we are running 150 miles per hour, God slows us down and say, you calm down. He does that. He get millions of ways of doing that. You know, Jonathan Edwards in his most prominent, you know, message, Sinner in the Hand of an Angry God, he said God have millions of ways of reducing man, you know, to the lowest. So he's not just a small God. So I want to let you know, this is what we're doing in Liberia. Thank you for allowing me to speak to you. May God richly bless you. Thank you.